Alexa, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. Like I mentioned earlier, I had started a fitness journey about a year ago and was going through all kinds of different wearables and things that I could have done to improve kind of my own fitness. And Whoop was one of those products that came up that kind of captured my attention and my imagination. So could you tell us more about Whoop and what your position is at Whoop?
Sure. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be here. So Whoop is a health and fitness tracker designed for everyone from elite athletes all the way down to people who are just interested in learning more about their health. And I lead our health team there. So anything around stress, nutrition, mental health, women's health, anything we're looking to explore in the new area, really looking to champion any of our health-focused consumers. So anyone who kind of wants a better understanding of their body and how they work.
Gotcha. And can you kind of tell me a little bit more about what makes Whoop different? You know, there's a lot of different fitness trackers out there. You have everything from, you know, Google with Fitbit to, you know, options with, you know, Apple Watches and whatnot. So what really sort of differentiates Whoop from other products in the space?
Sure. So I'd say Whoop has three primary differentiators. I'd say one, we are one of the most accurate wearables on the market. The quality of data collection that we have is incredible. And we have an incredible team that processes that and turns that into metrics that you can consume on our mobile app. We also support 24/7 wear, which is really cool. It allows us to track all of your activity data during the day and all of your sleep at night. So you really get a 360-degree view of your health and your data. And we facilitate that. We have this wrist strap here, which is the primary way that most people wear it. We also have a line of apparel called Whoop Body, where you can take the actual sensor out and put it in a bunch of different places so that you can wear it, you know, if you're going to a formal event, if you're doing something where you can't have something on your wrist, we have a whole set of products for that. And then we also have this battery pack that slides over the top, so you don't even have to take it off for charging. We have about 5 to 7 day battery life. And then the third is that we really provide you with the data. So, you know, we don't sugarcoat it. We don't soften it. Like, we'll give you everything and allow you to totally nerd out if you want. But then at the same time, we also provide insight and coaching. So it makes it digestible. You don't have to have a PhD to, you know, interpret or use Whoop. But if you do, we'll give you everything in kind of the raw form and allow you to totally nerd out.
Very nice. Yeah. And you had mentioned fidelity of data and women's health in there. Something interesting that you brought up when we were doing a little bit of the kind of pre-podcast talking was the fact that up until the 90s, women weren't required to be in clinical trials. Is that correct?
Yeah, isn't that wild? That legislation came out in the 90s.
Yeah, that shocked me. So, you know, sort of the fidelity of the data and making sure that we cover a segment of the audience that hasn't been kind of served well. What are some of the ways that Whoop is trying to combat that, and how are you guys integrating that data in a way that really kind of makes sense to, you know, serve a more diverse audience?
Sure. Yeah. So I think across the board in kind of the health and wellness industry, we're operating in a bit of a blind spot when it comes to women because there's just a lack of data around basic science. So, like you mentioned, it wasn't until fairly recently that we've required women to be included in clinical trials for things like drug development. So understanding how certain medications and dosages should be changed for women, all the way down to, you know, like seatbelts were actually designed on male crash test dummies and then tested on 75% scaled versions for women. And so when you think about the different physiology, you know, I have shoulders and a waist and breasts that a man doesn't. And so how the seatbelt kind of sits on my body or sits during impact is actually different. So, so we're all kind of fumbling around a bit, across the industry, but there's a lot more awareness, for this lack of data and, or this lack of information. And so you're seeing a lot more science, companies, and then even research focused on closing some of those gaps. And then companies like Whoop taking that research as it's coming off the line and productizing it and trying to figure out how to make it digestible and actionable for the end consumer. So when you think about kind of the intersection of high performance and women's health, you're seeing things like cycle-based training. You're seeing people revisit the recommendations around pregnant women being more sedentary during their pregnancy. And you're seeing some research actually supporting a more active lifestyle and that resulting in healthier, you know, easier labor and healthier babies and quicker recovery times post delivery. So we're staying very close to what is coming out, emerging research and some of the companies and the people that are kind of leading in that space. And once we've kind of seen the research validated sufficiently, taking what we can and productizing what's appropriate when we have really high confidence that that's what we want to share with our members.
Yeah, it seems highly more personalized, right? Like instead of genericizing health and fitness into, yeah, we can collect some of this data and show it back to you. That actual personalization to these people seems very important, especially in differentiating from the market that is not necessarily a very old market. It's, what was it, 2009 is when the first Fitbit came out. Mm-hmm. I think it was around that, and Apple Watch around the 2015 mark. Mm-hmm. So, like we're not that mature into this space. And I know data accuracy was a big problem about in 2015 when we ran a survey, and data accuracy was a big problem. But that personalization just seems like it screams like, oh yeah, we can give you a more tailored experience to you specifically, not just data showing you, yeah, this is what, you know, this is what you could do. This is your steps tracked. That's all it is. I love that. And that's what drew me to want to talk to you on the podcast, right? Is that it's just such an interesting perspective, right? I'd love to hear about how you actually get some of that involved inside product development. Like, how are you injecting those users in product development to get those insights?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I think there are two sides. There's collecting more precise, more accurate, and more data, and now having the compute capacity to process it and offer really granular insights to the individual. But then there's also the other side, which is so now we know this information about you, what should we be coaching you to do? And every person's fitness journey is very unique, what works for their body, what doesn't. You layer in hormone levels, underlying health conditions, et cetera. So those two kind of together mean we can offer a much more personalized coaching experience and ideally health journey. But to your point as well, like we also need to ensure that we have really diverse perspectives in the product development process to understand all the different unique personas that might exist. So we spend a lot of time thinking about talking to and learning from our members. And so it allows us to create these really rich personas that we then use to help kind of categorize different feature or different areas of product development. And so we think about, you know, when we are looking at building something new, especially something kind of net new to the business, like this kind of investment in women's health, we focus on not only who we currently have within the member population, but also going outside of and looking at people who have left Whoop, who are not familiar with the product, who maybe represent groups that are not ones we typically go after. And that's not just, you know, age or geographic location. That's also attitudes towards health, previous health experiences. There are kind of lots of different ways that you can represent diversity within a population. So we're very conscious when we are kicking off a discovery study with our UX designers and with our team to think about who is on that interview list and is that representative. Do we have representation across personas? If we're going deep on one, have we kind of sprinkled in some other people just to make sure that we're getting a really rich and diverse set of perspectives? Because discovery is meant to be exploratory, like you're meant to be surprised. Mm-hmm. And so if you go through an entire set of interviews and you hear the exact same perspective over and over, it could mean you have product market fit, which is great, but it also could mean that you're talking to only one kind of thinker, one type of consumer.
Yeah, that sentiment that you said about like meaning to be surprised, right? You should walk into this with the expectation that you might run into things that you expect to see, right? But also like having the open mind to say like, we may run into things that are completely different outside of the scope of anything that we could have guessed. And that's something that we've touched on a lot throughout the podcast, especially within the framework and kind of context of testing, is that if you're running sort of a beta test or some kind of exploratory panel, like you mentioned, and you just go in with like a list of things that you want to see, it's like, okay, we, you know, checked off these three boxes and then you're done. You're probably kind of selling your own program short. So yeah. I'm really glad that you brought that up. And also bringing up the idea of, hey, we need to bring in these different audiences that may not be kind of traditionally reached by our, you know, traditional marketing or our traditional product market fit. Is it challenging to sort of get those audiences to engage with you, especially if they're maybe not an audience that has been considered in the past?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it varies. I think one of the biggest barriers we have when we're looking at testing a new feature is just there's like a certain base level of education that we have to provide. So what is heart rate? What is heart rate variability? Why is sleep tracking important? And so you kind of end up spending a good chunk of the interview kind of doing the base education to then get into the questions. So we've seen some challenge there, but at the same time, you know, there's some great tools and networks. I think we're not the first ones to realize that we need to get to people outside of our own email distribution lists. And so there are great platforms that we can leverage to tap into users across the world. And we have some really great filtering tools we can use to help ensure that we're kind of getting to the type of person that we want to speak to in that moment.
Yeah. I imagine it gets more difficult with scale, right? Like as you're going from discovery into things like the design and in a little more in development, that you might be adding to that sample, right? Getting a little bit bigger and bigger samples each time. Is that difficult at all to start scaling with those users, especially when you start talking about the diversification aspect of it, making sure you have representation for each of these markets?
Yeah, I think we almost do our product development in this kind of like go out, come back type model. So, you know, we'll go out, we'll do a set of discovery calls. We'll gain a bunch of insight. We'll take that back. We'll iterate with our team. But then the risk is that, okay, you've done your customer development, check the box. Okay, move on. We can now move to hi-fi design and implementation. But then you run the risk of getting stuck in the echo chambers that might exist within the organization. And so we'll go out, we'll have some conversations, we'll come back, we'll ideate, and then we'll make a second or a third attempt to go out and talk to another set of users. And it doesn't have to be massive. You know, you don't have to have every single person. It's kind of unrealistic to think you'll get every single market and person and persona represented in every call. But by kind of going out and gut checking and saying, okay, we have a hypothesis around which persona or personas this feature is meant to support best, based on whatever kind of need it's addressing. Okay, is it resonating with that group? Okay, now let's kind of sprinkle in some other people. Is there some other group we can realize that this might resonate with that we didn't expect? And if you kind of do that a few times throughout the process, as you get more and more hi-fi and you get more and more concrete in your requirements and move approvals up the leadership chain, then by the time you are beginning implementation, you're very confident not only that you've gotten a lot of input from users, but you've also made sure that you're balancing user input with what the company direction and kind of base of knowledge can contribute as well.
Yeah, I love the continuous nature to it too, because being a consumer brand, the market changes very quickly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you're only doing, say, a round of research early on, you're like, cool, I got a good idea. Now let's just go build that out. Let's just go develop it and let's just go put it out into the world afterwards. That time frame could have changed everything. Like, right, the pandemic happened pretty dang quickly and a lot of markets were different or thrown off guard. So I love hearing that continuous. We have to keep going back and moving around, iterate.
And you make micro assumptions at each step in the process. So every design decision you make, every UX decision, every product decision you make, you're making micro assumptions. And if you wait for too long without checking them, they can compound and you can end up really far off course from where you kind of intend to go. So going back allows you to kind of gut check, okay, are these assumptions correct? Yes. Okay, great. Continue. No. Okay, how can we pivot early rather than later?
Yeah. Save that money, right? Like pivoting later after things have already gone up, you know, sailed is is dangerous. It's risky.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing, and you touched on this a little bit, Chris, is that the trends in health change very, very quickly. I've been following sort of some health podcasts here and there in health and wellness. And, you know, the spectrum of things that you encounter, it seems to change almost monthly. You know, one time it's gut health and it changes to basal health. And then it's, you know, resting heart rate. And then it's, you know, what kind of supplement should I be focusing on? Not that you guys are focused on supplements at all, but you do have this very wide range of data points and sort of ideas that people are kind of focused on. So for Whoop, how do you guys decide, like, okay, we need to focus on this right now? How do you prioritize those items when there's just so much going on and so much change within the space?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think part of the reason that the health kind of personal health journey can be so challenging is because you have so many different things coming out in because everything is so personalized, you know, gut health might be my issue or intermittent fasting might work for me, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It does require a lot of kind of onus on the consumer to parse through a lot of this stuff. And so companies like Whoop, part of what we're trying to do is take a lot of the research when we're very confident in it, make it digestible and then make it relatable to you. So now you can see, you know, if you're doing intermittent fasting, you can see how it's impacting your body comp, your strain, your stress, all these things. And we're providing you a tool too, if you want to do your own experimentation, like we can offer that. And if not, you can consume our content because we've kind of filtered it down ideally and made it digestible for you. But thinking about, you know, how we decide what to prioritize, we're guided by a set of OKRs coming down from kind of objectives and key results. So a set of goals from leadership down. And we use those as kind of guide rails and frameworks into which we try to slot all of our projects. So when I'm thinking about what do I, you know, what should health prioritize for a given quarter? It's like, okay, well, what are the OKRs that we really want to impact this quarter or this year? Who are the users we're trying to go after? And how can we think about projecting or predicting what we think the impact to those OKRs would be for these respective projects, rank them that way, layer it in with the other teams and the other things that people are working on. And sometimes we realize that, you know, for a given quarter, one team actually doesn't have a lot on their roadmap that is going to be especially high impact on the OKRs that we're really trying to drive change or drive progress towards. And so sometimes teams will kind of combine to support a team that does have a really high impact project. And so it's really powerful to see the entire organization be flexible in moving resourcing around to support the things that we know will bring the biggest value to our members. Because our OKRs are all driven around, yes, creating a healthy business, but also around delivering maximum member value.
Yeah. And I love that cross functionality, you know, being able to go to the different teams and collaborate in ways where, you know, you had mentioned earlier the micro assumptions, right? You know, those little things in the back of your head that could accidentally steer the product direction in one way or another that's totally not intended. But the way that you just described it, you know, being able to go to another team, discuss it, go out to the customers, get their data, come back in and really, really evaluate. I think that's a really strong message for anyone who's trying to run a panel or a testing program is just always constantly let yourself be challenged by the data that's coming in and everything else that you're hearing from your customers or other team members around you. I think that's really, really important and potent.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Earlier in the podcast, you had mentioned that, you know, Whoop is great because you get this high quality data and you don't necessarily need to be PhD level to mm-hmm. understand it and utilize it to your fullest. But on the flip side, you guys also have the Whoop Scientific Advisory Council, which has lots of medical experts and wellness experts and whatnot. And that's something that really excited me when I heard about it. And they're a much different audience than your typical Whoop user, right? They may use Whoop every day, right? I'm sure a couple of them do. But they have a much more kind of scientific and nuanced approach to how they understand things, right? So I'd love to hear more about some of the feedback you received from them. How it differs from what you usually get from your users and how that's starting to kind of steer the product forward.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're fortunate at Whoop to have access to some of the preeminent thinkers and leaders in the health and fitness space. And there's so much, like I kind of mentioned before, there's so much research coming out and more coming every day. And so this group really helps us understand what is the latest and how can we take that and deliver it to our members. And so when you join Whoop, one of the benefits is you really get access to this group by proxy because we consult with them directly and they provide really valuable input into the product. So, you know, Dr. Sims and Dr. Stacey Sims and Dr. Hazel Wallace have been really instrumental in the development of our existing pregnancy coaching and menstrual cycle coaching features and some of our research that we've put out around that. Dr. Andrew Huberman was instrumental in developing our stress monitor and the accompanying breath work that goes with that to help manage, you know, your physiological activation. So as an end Whoop customer, you know, you're getting access to these individuals in a really kind of special way. And to your point, like they, the feedback they provide is definitely different. You know, we're not necessarily asking them, you know, is this flow usable or is this button directing you to where you would expect? But they're providing really invaluable, I would say we take their information, they're providing really invaluable input into the content and what we should be offering. Like, here is what science is saying we could do if you're trying to impact this metric. And so we take that, we turn that into a product experience, and then we take that to our customers and say, you know, this is what so-and-so has told us is an effective way to move this metric. Does that make sense? Would you do this? Does this seem feasible or achievable? And does it seem enjoyable? And so, or is this a goal? Is this a metric that you're trying to move? So, I think it's important to have both ends of the spectrum. We have some highly technical users who work in research in the field, but getting input from both people who do this full-time professionally and are able to be very comfortable diving into a stack of research papers, but then also pairing that with, if I am an end consumer, what actually makes sense and it will fit within my day and my lifestyle, because we don't all have necessarily the luxury of like being a pro athlete and prioritizing, you know, fitness and recovery in the same way that they might. So figuring out how we can marry those two and give you the latest, but also make it attainable.
It's interesting. So my wife has been pregnant a couple times now. We have a few kids. And she would have a bunch of trackers on her phones. So she would have apps and she had her Apple Watch and all this stuff, but all this data was like completely separate. And then she'd be manually putting stuff into these apps. And I'd ask her all the time, like, why are you doing that? And she's like, well, so I could track and get some information. But it was never ever personalizing much to her. It wasn't giving her much data back. And it was still all manual for her. So like if she skipped a day, she'd feel really bad about it. So it's interesting as you're talking about this, it's more into that personalization vein and kind of differentiating from some of the other trackers out there, is that by collecting, since you have access to all this data, collecting it, giving some insights in from a specific domain, and then personalizing it back to that user to help them achieve what they want, because they're not just wearing a tracker to have access to the data and say, oh yeah, there's the data. They're trying to move something. They're trying to improve or change something. So that was immediately when you started telling that story, I'm like, oh man, that's a perfect situation that my wife could have avoided a lot of struggles with in having that.
Yeah. Because like she observed, there are a lot of different providers out there that can provide different kinds of content, but where wearable like Whoop becomes really powerful is not only can we track your data 24/7 and show you what's happening, but also we can show what is unique to you. So, you know, I run a little bit cold as a person. And so what is an elevated temperature for me might be a normal temperature for most people, or what is an elevated resting heart rate for me, Alexa, could be different than what is typical for, you know, a female of my age range. And so, it allows you to get much more personalized. And then from there you layer in, okay, now I'm doing this outside research, or I have this outside content that I'm consuming, and I can look at it with a much kind of more zoomed in lens, or much like kind of more fine tooth comb through with a much finer tooth comb, to really gain like, okay, what are the things that are unique to me or that I might want to pay attention to in any context.
Yeah. And hope that sounds like it would have a bigger impact. There's a technique in writing, and it says, don't write to the caveat. So when you're explaining, like, here's a process, here's how it goes, you don't want to throw in a bunch of caveats. Well, if you're software only, you're going to have to do that. But if you're hardware only, you're going to have to do that. Or if you're, you know, a woman that runs hot, you might have to do this. Versus cold, you might have to do this. By narrowing it and just writing to the person, showing the data and the recommendations to the person based on them, I feel like they will have a bigger impact, and it likely faster. And they'll be more confident, I guess, in that product.
That's what we hope.
Yeah.
Sticking on the theme of sort of the diversity and being able to personalize these kind of experiences to your different customers, it sounds like your team is doing a really great job of pushing forward on that. Obviously, the work never stops, right? You don't just say, oh, we're inclusive now and kind of that's it, you know, we're done, you know. What's some advice that you would give to teams that don't necessarily yet support that initiative of being very inclusive, or are just kind of starting the journey of trying to include more audiences and more perspectives in their product development?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think there's a difference between having a clear target persona, and especially if you're early, a beachhead market, and having blinders on. And so I think you want to be very clear about who you are building for, what their core problems are, who they are, what their jobs to be done are, what they're afraid of, what they're excited about. But you also want to make sure that you're not kind of fitting the model to that specific person, and that you're also considering that ideally, especially if you know you're an early company, ideally, or an early feature, you hit this beachhead market, you crush it, and then you want to expand to others. But if you've really only focused on this group, there's a good chance that you've built something that might only serve that one need. So finding the right way to balance going after that persona, and that could be just the mix of people that you include in your interviews. So maybe it's, you know, 80% are your core target persona and 20% are outside of, or, you know, throw in some wild cards of people that you really wouldn't expect to be able to, or find value in that feature, but you know, maybe you're surprised yourself that they do. So I think it's looking at, and then as you get more mature, it's formalizing that process a little more. And so, you know, you should still really own your core personas, but also making sure that you have a representative sample across a whole different kind of lenses of diversity. Again, it's not just like age or gender or geographic location. It's jobs to be done. It's approaches to health. It's goals for joining. It's, you know, a whole host of other things. And making sure that you kind of mix and match, and so that you have a pretty robust group that you're speaking to get all those perspectives without sacrificing, you know, your strategic clarity.
Yeah, I'd love to hear about, so I've heard personas a couple times. I love jobs to be done. That's a fun one. Do your personas thread through all of development from that concept stage, or say even pre-concept, into your design and into development, implementation, and support? Like, are your personas stringed across all of those phases?
Yeah, they definitely are. I think in a product like Whoop, where we are offering you know, highly personalized, highly tailored, but a single product for all those personas, you have to think about, okay, how is this feature going to show up for these four different types of people, for example? Mm-hmm. And will it add value? And if it's not going to be as valuable to one group, how are we thinking about managing that? Are we just expecting lower engagement? Is there something we can do to tweak it to increase the value? And that's somewhat different from some other products that I've worked on, where you're intentionally building a feature or a product for a specific persona. And actually it's okay to, you know, of the four, you're picking this one and you're building this thing. And that persona will go with you all the way from ideation to design, to development, to marketing, to post-launch, you know, monitoring. But that it's intentionally not meant to serve other personas. So, at Whoop, we definitely, while there might be one or two target personas that we're going after with a given feature, I think all of them have to be considered throughout, because we are offering, we're still like a single product company at this point.
Mm-hmm. And sort of, do those features constantly change as more kind of research and ideas are coming through the pipeline? I mean, it never stops with health and science, right? We're always pushing forward. So is that something that you guys at Whoop are very cognizant of? It's like, this feature might be like this week, and then, you know, 6 months from now, it's completely different?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we think of evolutions of our features rather than complete rewrites. But I think that's where our partners in, you know, I sit within the product organization, but that's where our partners in data science and performance science are huge, huge advantages, because they're able to go out and read the latest papers and kind of keep a pulse on what's happening. And then when they feel that there's kind of sufficient momentum around a certain idea, that's when we can get brought in and begin to think about how we could productize it. But I think we also are very, we're kind of very focused on lean agile. So shipping discrete pieces of software. And rather than saying we're going to take on, you know, all of mental health, for example, and build everything in the space, we're going to pick one thing that we think is really interesting. We're going to do it really well. We're going to release it. We're going to see how it engages. We're going to look at, you know, we're going to involve people as we're developing it, but we're also going to look at post-launch engagement, who's interacting with it, who's not, what do those who are interacting with them like about it? If they're not, what don't they like about it? Should we build something on top of this to serve that next group? Do we double down with the group that loves it? Like, then we start to get in some interesting conversations that gets back to the prioritization kind of question we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. which is like, okay, so now we have data on both what people want, how they're using what we have ideas for what we could do in the future. What are we, like, what are our North Stars for the year, for the quarter, for the business? And how do these different potential paths impact those North Stars? And then how do we want to prioritize and allocate resourcing from there?
Yeah. And when you're sort of collecting all of this data, is it just sort of a constant stream of data that's coming from Whoop users? Or do you occasionally sort of set aside like, okay, we're going to have a focus group of maybe 20 users here or 30 users here and sort of run a test with them? Or is it like, hey, we have this just massive stream of data. You know, we can take a look at each of these personas or profiles and see what's changing. Sort of differences in method there?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's important to call out two different kinds of data. So one is like feature engagement, and that's stuff that we look at through kind of our analytics dashboards. But then there's a lot of the data that I've been talking about when we talk about customer discovery is from actual either surveys or even better conversations with users. And so we are definitely, like I mentioned, we have a really engaged member base and they're very generous with their time. And so I sit down with at least two members a week to talk about features we're working on or just their general views on Whoop. And that's kind of a live one-on-one conversation. Then we've also started, we do leverage focus groups both virtually, but also in person. And that's really powerful to have people coming into the Whoop office, you know, sitting around a conference table, sometimes over lunch, talking about both, you know, in those kinds of conversations, you're able to get specific on a feature, but also general and really understand like who are these people as people, and how can we show up for them more effectively. So that's interviews, focus groups. We also leverage surveys both in-app and through kind of third-party services, and those can be great ways to gather data that can be more quantitative and isn't quite as narrative. And then we, from there, we'll look at kind of like I mentioned this, like post-launch analytics. So just your typical like feature engagement metrics from there. So it really spans. We have a whole set of tools at our disposal, both in-person and virtual platforms that we use that are huge helps to make sure that we reach all the different people that we want to with the frequency that we need.
Yeah. Interested at your take on beta, private, bullpup, like closed and public versions of that in terms of that tool set, right? And in terms of those methodologies, interviews serve a very different purpose than say a focus group versus a survey and versus beta. So like, how are you viewing beta as part of that toolbox?
Yeah. So we definitely do big internal betas. I think we are highly sensitive to the fact that we are providing people tools that will opine on their health. And so we need to be 110% sure that what we are shipping is ready, is bug free. And so we will do massive internal betas, you know, really try to dog food the product, make sure it's working in all sorts of different situations. And then we will leverage external beta as well. We have a kind of network of highly engaged Whoop users that we leverage for that. But you know, anytime something leaves the office, there's always a little bit of nerves around, you know, is it leaked? Are we ready? You know, all this kind of stuff. But we have really robust testing and frameworks and the kind of approval checkpoints to make sure that when it does go out, even to external beta, it is ready to go. And those are some of the most, like, I think external beta weeks are probably my most nerve-wracking, but also exciting, because that's when... Yeah. You know, it does get outside of the four walls of the office and you start to really get real users using it. And hopefully you've done your diligence and it goes well and people enjoy it. But there are also some times where people come back and say, oh my gosh, what is this? I don't like it. I don't want it. And that's equally valuable. And so then you get a kind of fun scramble where you're trying to figure out, okay, like, you don't like it. Why? Is there anything we can fix about it? Like, what do we miss here? What do we get wrong? And how can we see around that corner next time? So, you know, I think as we move through the internal external beta process with these kind of highly engaged Whoop users, it's kind of a cool treat because they get to see stuff a little bit early, because they've been really engaged with us, but then, they've also been really generous with their feedback and their time to help make the product better for everyone.
Yeah.
It's something we've definitely figured out is like being in the beta testing space at CenterCode. There is always a group of people that is just so passionate. And I'm talking about like your customers. There's a group of passionate customers that's willing to like fight with you. They're not fight with you, but like going up into the battle with you and saying, here's what's working. Here's what's not working. Here's what I like, what I don't like. They're willing to go an extra mile to say, yeah, I'll hop on a call with you and we can do an interview real quick, or I'll drive down the office and we can, you know, we can talk about it. We love those beta warriors, or those early adopters, those really invested people. Like we love that.
Yeah, we love them as well.
Yeah. I was going to say earlier, no one reports that, oh, the sleep tracker only caught 2 hours last night, but that's okay. It could go one way or the other. So you guys definitely have the advantage of working with a very passionate audience, which is awesome. Yeah. And you say that they're very, very generous with your time. Do you get high levels of engagement through your app if you push out a survey that says, tell us about your kind of recent experience with this feature?
Absolutely. And especially, you know, working in the women's health space, I've had some really just powerful conversations with female members about their own health journeys and how Whoop has played a role. And, you know, usually they have happy endings, but it's been really, you know, as product manager for this space, I kind of feel it is my job to show up and represent these users in conversations and advocate for what they need. And so, you know, I come armed with really powerful testimonials about how Whoop has made a material impact on someone's health journey or relationship with exercise or whatever it may be. And so very grateful for the people who come and share, but then also feel like that's a big responsibility to take that on and make sure that we do right by those users.
Sound like an amplifier into the company, right? Like taking that voice of the customer and pushing it across. So I love that specific, like you're having conversations about here's a journey that one of your users had went through, and that's being communicated back into the company and to different teams, right? Like we'll talk about like, oh yeah, engineering and UX and then the marketing and sales folks and how we position and market our product. It seems like that's super valuable perspective to have for all of those individuals, is to have that voice being spoken towards them.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And talking about just inclusivity in general, you know, having all these voices and being able to amplify voices within these decision-making spaces, right? Where do you see sort of the future of tech in general heading in terms of making sure that every user's needs are met? You know, how do we really push forward and make sure that we're keeping that inclusive space in these decision-making spaces?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, as we continue to gather more data and we have more insight, we have the ability to process more and more data and personalize even more, like that's great. But we also need to make sure that the funnel at the top, the groups that we're collecting the data from, is wide enough to capture a sufficiently diverse set of perspectives. So it's unlikely we'll get it right every time, but if we're at least conscious of it and actively making an effort to bring in voices, like many, many voices to the conversation, then as we offer these more personalized experiences and build these higher touch features and products across tech, we'll have a better chance of building something that really speak to everyone.
Yeah. And we've talked about it previously as well, just being able to get out there and have that wide variety of personas and always, you know, checking back in with your audience, right? Because, I mean, we all change over time, right? You know, our health needs change, our activity levels change, et cetera. Perceptions change, right? You know, someone's perception about their health or towards someone else's health changes. So just being able to always be able to go in and say, who is our customer, right? Because your customer isn't always going to be the same. You know, who is the end user? I know, Chris, this is something that we've talked about in previous episodes, is that you can't always imagine yourself as the end user. You know, you can, we just had a great talk with Mike Mars. He works at another wellness company. And he was saying, like, you know, you can't get in a room and just have a group of like middle-aged men sit around a table and try to just imagine, like, oh, you know, I'm a soccer mom, you know, working out somewhere. might get a little bit of value out of it, but it's not by any means going to be the real experience that you're seeing from your users. So I'm really glad that you brought that up. And yeah, you're not going to get it right every time, right? Or the first time, but just having the willingness and the mindset to go out there and do it is incredible. So I'm glad that you brought that up about mindsets, because it's super important.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. Another question for you on that is, are there other industries in the tech world that can really learn from regarding kind of inclusivity? You know, are there other areas that you've seen or in your past that you've seen, or it's like, yeah, we could really use maybe more inclusive voices in this space right now?
These are other industries that would benefit from including more diverse perspectives?
I can reread my question here and we can edit out a little bit, but are there other industries that the tech world can learn from regarding inclusivity? So to actually rewind the question, you know, where can tech look to say like, you know, oh, we've done it this way before, but now looking elsewhere, we can see this might be a better way to do it or a more inclusive way to do something.
It's an interesting question. I think looking at from my own background, before I worked in tech, I was a teacher, and that was kind of my job in high school and through college. And in teacher training, you're taught that every student thinks differently, learns differently, and that you kind of need to be empathetic and adaptable to those different learning styles. And you need to kind of figure out what are the different ways that you can work with this individual child to find what resonates with them. And so not only how do you kind of connect with them, but also What are they trying to learn? What are they trying to get out of the experience? Like what makes them excited to come to class every day, and how can you lean into that and celebrate that? And so I think, you know, bringing that into tech, engineers are amazing people and tech people are amazing people, but we're all kind of taught to think one way. We're taught to go out and talk to the user, but we potentially kind of have some groupthink. And so stepping back and trying to understand, you know, this might be objectively the best UX flow, but do you really understand how the accountant that you're working with thinks, or the mom that you're working with thinks? And what does that user want to get out of the interaction with your product? Like, why are they coming to class? Why are they coming to your product every day? So I think we can look to a little bit actually the classroom setting to potentially find some lessons on how to include or speak to these different groups in different ways. I think, you know, overall, I'm very excited and encouraged. I think we've made a lot of progress in including more diverse perspectives in product development and in testing. And I think we have much more awareness as an industry about this need to continue to touch base with your customer and touch base with a lot of different types of people to really build things that will resonate for all of them, and especially so in the health and wellness space. But I think we also have a long way to go. And so I'm excited to, you know, over the course of my career and over the course of Whoop's journey, continue to grow and get better.
Yeah. Something Colin Flanagan, he was another previous guest. He works in customer experience. And one thing he really made a point about was understanding the user's journey. Within the context of what he was saying, it was more like, you know, my user has an issue, and in order to solve that issue, I need to understand where they're coming from, you know, the steps they've gone through, what may have caused it, et cetera. And I really like sort of an angle you hinted at there. It's, you know, what's the journey of value? You know, why is the user coming to us for this? And I think it's really powerful to understand that, right? Like what is someone actually getting out of the tracker? You know, what are they getting out of this data? So that must be, you know, a big thing for you guys to focus on is like, how do we really tailor in a way that serves them best?
And it might not always be the value that you expect. Yeah. So you might think that a member wants X, but actually what they really appreciate about it is Y. So, you know, for example, like Peloton, you might think, well, they want to get a workout, but maybe they actually want someone to encourage them and call them awesome and tell them that they're a warrior for 30 minutes because there isn't anyone else that's doing that for them. So I also think that you can sometimes be surprised by what your users actually come to your product for.
Yeah. I think I told the story on one of the previous podcasts that we had. I was testing a smart grill and it had Wi-Fi on it. And you'd assume the benefit is Wi-Fi is, you know, you can connect to it remotely. You know, it's going to be more accurate. It's very rational things. But if you were to, I asked the users, I'm like, why do you like it so much? What's so beneficial about, you know, having Wi-Fi? Like, well, I can spend time with my family. Because before I'd have to like sit out there and watch it and pay attention to it. And now I can leave that because I'm trusting in this device now to tell me if anything's wrong that I need to take action on, and I can go devote that time somewhere else. So ensuring that we have to understand that there's the why behind, and in making sure that it's not our guess. One thing that I'd love to get your take on, Alexa, is the idea of this problem space and solution space concepts within product development. And where are you guys finding problem spaces? And then how are you getting to that solution space?
Yeah, I think we have a bit of a mix. I think anytime you're building new tech, so I think about our strength trainer feature, in particular, the ability to quantify musculoskeletal load from a weightlifting activity. No one else in the market had done it before, that I'm aware of. And so in that situation, we might have known that there was a problem. People were getting their strain scores, but it was highly indexed on cardio activities, and people weren't feeling they were getting credited sufficiently for their weightlifting activities. But you probably spend more time in the solution space as well, because you're kind of building new tech and productizing versus I think more classic product management, where you are working with, you're working with your customers. It's kind of a deep understanding of what is important to them and what they're trying to do on a given day. So the example you gave about the smart grill, you wouldn't know that spending time with that person's family is important to them until you really know them on a very personal level, outside of just, how do you grill? Do you like steak or burgers? Really diving into like, who are they as a person and what their values are. And so I think we take a similar approach, and we uncover things like, moms, typically moms have a lot of caregiving responsibilities and they have very little time to prioritize their health. And so, they might need something that will help them fit health and fitness into their schedule. And so if you ask them, what workout classes do you do, and do you like spinning outside or inside? That's not necessarily going to get to the core problem or how we can help them. You have to understand, okay, what are the demands in your life? What is important to you? How are you spending your time? So it's uncovering that solution space is about a lot more understanding the user as a person more completely than just thinking about the interaction of the user with your product or your current kind of space. And then taking that, once you have that list of problems, I'm a mom and I don't feel like I'm getting my sufficient activity for the day, but I also don't have an hour block to do a run or a spin class. Then it's thinking about, okay, well, how can we begin to build things with our existing feature set or outside, that meet that need. And then the cherry on top is when you can also provide a kind of sizzle or a sparkle or an extra, something that kind of surprises and delights the user as well.
Yeah. Speaking of that surprise and delight, has there ever been a time where you introduced a feature and then the users surprised and delighted you with how they were using that feature, and then that drove development of the feature in a completely different path? Has that ever happened within kind of developing Whoop?
Absolutely. So when we launched our stress monitor feature, which is essentially a way to measure physiological activation, one of our ingoing hypotheses was that people wanted to be alerted when they were experiencing high stress, and it would give them the opportunity to pause, potentially engage in breath work, and kind of calm their nervous system down. And when we launched, kind of went into beta with that feature, we realized that was not resonating. People were highly annoyed by the notifications.
I'm more stressed now. Yeah.
More stressed now after receiving the notifications, and weren't really engaging in the breath work in the way that we hoped. Mm-hmm. So what did we do? We hopped on the phone with a bunch of users and asked them, how are you using it? What do you like? What do you don't like, et cetera. And one of the things that we uncovered was that people were using it as a tool to identify essentially stress triggers. So, one gentleman observed that his stress levels became really high when his kids came home from school. He kind of worked from home and he had this kind of peace and quiet, and then they came home and it kind of caused him some stress. Mm-hmm. And so he said he started doing breath work in the 5 minutes before they came home from school. And he said he felt that that centered him and allowed him to show up as a much more present parent, because he kind of had identified that that was something that would cause him stress. He was able to take a mitigating activity beforehand. So that drove us to actually scrap the kind of just-in-time notifications and instead begin to overlay your WHOOP activity data onto your stress data. So now you can see, you know, this high stress moment comes after a workout or after I've sat in the sauna or immediately after I wake up in the morning, I'm experiencing high stress or particularly low stress. And so it's allowing people to begin to do a little bit more of that mapping to understand, okay, was this high stress period during a time when I was in a meeting? Oh, interesting. This same meeting every day seems to cause me stress. And then take whatever stress mitigation kind of tactics or behaviors or habits they want to pick up as a result. But we never would have gotten that insight around this like kind of trigger feedback flow if we hadn't had the opportunity to talk to users live and understand first gotten the feedback that what we had built wasn't resonating, mm-hmm. and then had the opportunity to talk to users and get that live feedback on how they were using it and what was providing value. And then from there, double down on building something that supported that kind of core use case.
Yeah, that's just so cool. I mean, just that, even that one comment, I know it's probably a body of feedback that goes in and influences that, but just having that insight and that context to hear like, you know, this is how we can really retool the future to provide that value is extraordinary. That's just such a cool story. So thank you for sharing that with us. That's awesome. So I should probably get a WHOOP now and see if starting the podcast is what causes my stress trigger.
Cyber 5 is happening live and 30-day trials. Can give you there my referral link.
Perfect. Yeah. Gotta plug the product at towards the end, right? So wrapping things up a little bit here. But I did want to ask you before we close out, you know, what are you really passionate about when it comes to product management, testing, integrating all this stuff? I think we've seen glimpses here of there of inclusion and making sure voices are heard. What keeps you passionate? What keeps you really pushing forward at WHOOP?
Sure. So I would say at a macro like industry level, I'm really excited about women's health and the intersection of women's health and wearables and hormone health. And, you know, the White House just put out a mandate around increasing focus on and funding mm-hmm. of women's health initiatives. And I'm really excited to see that research come out, us get a much better understanding of women's health and some of the gaps that we've had before closing some of those gaps and then turning those into products that consumers can use again across the fitness spectrum, age, life situation spectrum. So as a product manager working in the space on a wearable like WHOOP, I think we're in a really great position to offer really valuable insights to women around the world, around their health, around their fitness. So really, really excited about that as a PM. But then at a more general, like philosophical level, product is cool because you kind of get to solve people's problems and make people's dreams come true. Like you go and talk to someone and they're like, oh, this thing's been bothering me forever and ever and ever. And you know, you take that back enough, it bothers enough people and you're able to actually build a feature to solve the problem. And it's, you know, it's highly creative, it's highly technical. You get to work with incredibly smart people who are experts at what they do and kind of orchestrate all of those groups pulling together and rallying them around a user or a cause or a strategy. And then you deliver it and you see that kind of ideally delight in the user's eyes when you've solved a real need for them. So some days I feel, a bit like a conductor, but some days I feel a bit like a superhero solving people's problems.
Yeah. It's a good mix of both. Yeah. So, you guys are doing some amazing work. Super excited for the mindsets that you are continuing to kind of propagate and, promote out there. So, and thank you for being a great voice on our podcast as well, you know, providing your insights and your wisdom and really appreciate it. It was a blast having you on.
Awesome. Thanks. It was really great to be on. Great chat with you guys.